You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with Vasant Raval and Edward Morse, authors of the Isaka Journal Volume 5 article, Working from Home, Reassessing Risk and Opportunities. Thank you both for joining me today. So to get us started, could you talk about your own experience with remote communication?
Interestingly, I had my first telehealth visit with a doctor this week. And I never thought in my life I would see that. It is something that is unimaginable, but it works like a charm. It all depends on what the visit is meant for, how much evidence does the doctor need before him or her, and how we are going to address the questions that are meant for the visit. So it seems like more and more doors are opening up in terms of possibilities. We have to watch for technology and its security. We have to watch for the downsides and the blind sides of this particular opportunity. And hopefully we'll be able to muddle through the challenge.
What are some of the elements of human error that can put home workers at risk in terms of securing their technology, and how might those be avoided?
You know, the biggest risk is combining personal with the job. So if I have the same device that I'm using for personal communication and as well for the job, then I have an issue because if I click on a link that was sent to me by some suspicious attacker, the hacker, then I might find that I am a victim of some social engineering. And that in turn could filter over to the job environment. People will have to be trained in terms of exposures that they're going to run into when they work remotely. And oftentimes, one-time training will not be enough. You have to remind people not to do certain things, and that is kind of a challenge. Outside of that, I think the organizations will have to determine the boundaries, write new policies regarding work from home that should be much more detailed than what we have today.
I would say that's a big difference. You know, in an office environment, you have IT staff that are able to update training, also monitor your equipment, address the problems that you have. I mean, we can do that remotely. My university has great staff and they're able to log in remotely. But I have much more control over my home equipment in terms of what software I install, et cetera. The office environment requires administrative permissions in order to install those, and that has a security dimension because we're preventing malware and other nefarious forces from entering our system. The more control we give to individuals, the more potential nodes of our network can be affected. I also think some very simple things like, well, are the software updates and security updates on your computer systems happening properly? Again, you don't have IT people that are doing that. You're effectively outsourcing that to individuals. What about your wireless network? Everyone has wireless networks in their home. Are those secure? And then also just very practical things. I mean, maybe there's some trade-offs going on here, but where are you working? Are you really working at home? Who else is there at your house? What kind of information are you talking about, sharing, et cetera? You know, if you're within the confines of your office space, there's a great bit more of security. On the other hand, if you're a person who travels a lot and talks in airports, the fact that you're not in airports may make your world a lot more secure because your conversations aren't being overheard, your screens aren't being shared. So there are some very practical things that happen that affect security environments for remote workers that depend on just the locus of the work activity. That certainly merits some attention.
And the timing of this cannot be any better in the sense that 5G is around the corner. And when 5G shows up, hopefully the productivity, the speed, the quality of communication, etc.
So how can organizations evaluate the risk of their video conferencing technology?
That's a really great question, because I think there's still so much to learn about the security protocols and parameters that are available in each of the competing platforms. I was having this conversation about this with a couple of different groups. I've spoke with some people in the medical community. Vasant mentioned he was just having a remote conference. There are certainly firms that are helping to provide links between doctors and patients. They say things like they are HIPAA compliant. But honestly, I'm not even sure what that means, because I think we need to know more about the underlying technology. The other environment, you know, in the legal environment, I was speaking with a lawyer who was representing some clients in a remote location. And there's actually currently some litigation going on about how lawyers are going to communicate with their clients located in Guantanamo Bay. They're worried about things like how to even get a secure telephone line room going on, let alone going out to communication technology. But I think that brings up a bigger issue. Since there's some unknowns about the security parameters, and this is an area that's very much in flux. I mean, I think Zoom got some early attention for some flaws that were later fixed. To me, it's great to have a competition in the marketplace, and that we'll likely see improved security, and that security will become a selling point for the different platforms. But until we know more, I think what we have to do is let's go backwards in time and say, let's set up some parameters about what we will and will not talk about in video conference settings. I mean, one of my friends had a very good insight. He said, you know, honestly, if you really don't want someone to overhear your conversations, you probably should meet in a pasture somewhere in the sand hills of Nebraska, just the two of you, and then you can be sure no one's listening, right? That just illustrates the point, right? If you're dealing with something that's very sensitive, you're going to have to take extra precautions as compared with if you're having a podcast or a academic discussion, et cetera. We're much less concerned about those security environments. Having those parameters from the start to make sure we can target those kinds of communications that are most at risk and that place us at risk, you know, perhaps from our professional environment of either legal noncompliance or just violating professional standards. I think that those kind of conversations need to be had.
To add to what Ed said, I would just say that security comes in the mind of the owner according to the life cycle stage. So comparing, for example, Microsoft technology versus Zoom technology, you might find that Microsoft is ahead, not because of just this technology, but because they are more mature, they had a longer life, they have dealt with security in many more contexts before they come to the team technology that they are now offering.
I just think, you know, I'm a person that really believes in, I like Matt Ridley's book about innovation. You know, he says it comes by tinkering, right? So when we look at environment here, look how many providers have come in besides Microsoft. You have Microsoft, you have Zoom, you have WebEx, you have BlueJeans, and I'm sure I'm leaving out many. But the point of that is, in a competitive marketplace, you're going to have people bringing products to the marketplace that are designed to meet the needs of the users. And I think we're going to see constant tinkering and constant innovation, not just in the clarity of the channels, the ability to interact with one another. We're using, in the American Bar Association, we're using Remo as a platform for interacting in kind of a social, informal environments. We've yet to experience that. We're having our annual meeting next week. We're going to see how that works. But I think that security is just one element. What else can we transmit via this channel besides video? I mean, can we put data on here securely? Can we transmit documents securely? We've got other, even video transmission and other things that are coming from sources other than your webcam. So the benefit of that competitive marketplace is a very important thing. And everyone loves network effects. You love being able to have a platform that other people can use. But these providers have all shown themselves very capable of allowing access and download capabilities for apps. I wonder if we'll run into some problems in enterprises that are somewhat locked down in terms of the ability to add new software packages to your own computer. But generally speaking, the marketplace has been very responsive, and I think we're going to get some better products in the years to come.
Nothing is absolutely secure. There will always be vulnerabilities. And therefore, I would reiterate the point that Ed made earlier, and that is that, you know, the subject matter that you deal with in a remote context should be appropriate for remote work. Otherwise, you might as well go to the site and meet with people in person. If the conversation is about strategy of the company, it might as well be happening on site rather than on a call on some platform.
Yeah, those are some really great points. And something that was said about Zoom, the idea that it really was just sprung on them, I think captures how virtually, no pun intended, many, many people felt about the entire working from home shift. And so one final question for you here is, after 6 months or so of really the onset of this pandemic, at least in the United States, we've grown kind of accustomed to working from home and we've established some best practices and some patterns. So what do you think, what elements of working from home do you think are here to stay even beyond the pandemic and when it's safe to go back to the office?
I think working from home is going to be here to stay, but it will be more of a choice. You know, for some people, they're not constitutionally well served by being in an isolated environment. And there are creative sparks that happen when people are together. But all of us can point to times when, hey, we just need to get work done and we'd like to do it from our house. And it saves us all kinds of time. We don't have to commute. We don't have to deal with inclement weather. We don't have to deal with traffic, all those other things. And I think that that capacity to do that is going to endure. But I think we're also going to discover the value of getting people together and the creative spark that comes from human interaction and the value of interpersonal communication, sharing our life, sharing our successes together, the team building elements. So I think the world looks like a hybrid one to me.
And I agree. I think if you look at Facebook, for example, they have declared 60% of their employees will be working from home. Now it's kind of a broad dream and a generalization maybe. And the nature of their workforce is probably more suited to working from home. But the point remains that there will be a mix. Some jobs simply cannot be effectively performed from home. Others are more suited for remote functioning. And the challenge on the part of management and including human resource will be to really determine the parameters that can allow us to divide up the mix between remote work and on-site work.
Are there any final thoughts about your article that either of you would like to share?
You know, when we wrote this one, we didn't realize it is going to have cascading effect for decades to come, not just this year, next year, but it is going to change the economy, it is going to change the infrastructure, it is going to change the implications for auto industry, real estate, infrastructure, and even environment, climate, for example. And so it is a very, very big topic compared to where we started. And I'm truly anxious to see how we shape the economy and where we land eventually, say, 2, 3, 5 years from now.
Yeah. I would just say that we've learned so much in the last 3 months since we've written the article. We could have written a much better article today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Edward and Vasant. That's all the time we have on this episode of the Isaka podcast. To make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast today.